Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting, broadcasting, broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world, to the world, to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
You are listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. Please visit our sponsor, which is the book, Do You Have the Guts to Be Beautiful? This anti-aging book is available at vitalitycapsules.com/truth-files. Get your copy of Dr. Daniels' book that has helped men and women look and feel younger, 20 years younger. Be the first in your circle to get those envious inquiries and those admiring glances. And get your personal paperback book with free shipping in the United States at vitalitycapsules.com/truth-files. Great. Of course, I welcome your calls and questions, so please call in at 914-338-0695. And today's topic is medical heresy. Could the medical healthcare system in the United States actually be a form of heresy, a form of violation of each and every religion known to man? In other words, modern medicine may actually be a state religion. The state religion our founding fathers sought to avoid when they fled to the New World. And so let's take a look at what religion is. Religion is a set of beliefs concerning the cause, nature, and purpose of the universe, especially when considered as the creation of a superhuman agency or agencies that's like God figures, usually involving devotional and ritual observances and often containing a moral code governing the conduct of human affairs. And it's in my observation that medicine has taken over the lives of citizens and controls or attempts to govern every facet of human affairs and existence. So, let's take a look at a little more political perspective on this. In some communist states, notably North Korea and Cuba, the state sponsors religious organizations, and activities outside those state-sponsored religious organizations are met with various degrees of official disapproval. And in these cases, state religions are widely seen as efforts by the state to prevent alternate sources of authority. Sounding a little bit familiar already, huh? So in other words, alternative healthcare versus standard medicine, the attempt to prevent any kind of alternate source. So that's important. And the authority, obviously, is a person using a different source of information to guide their decision. Okay. So we're going to focus on the set of beliefs concerning the purpose of the universe and life itself, and the creation of superhuman agencies. In other words, what are the gods, if any, here? So medicine has, like I said, taken over the lives of individuals. Now let's start from the beginning. I'm going to start with marriage, because life is really a big cycle. You've got to start somewhere. So we're going to start with marriage. Many states actually insist on or require a blood test prior to marriage. In other words, only if blood is drawn and a ritual is followed can the two get married? We now realize that there is no scientific basis for this, because if indeed there is a disease involved, there's therapy for whatever disease might be detected. In the case of the incurable AIDS, it's incurable because, of course, well, it doesn't exist. Let's talk about conception. Conception has a very firm set of rules governing conception in terms of medicine. Conception, meaning the union of an egg and a sperm, is something that is okay when it occurs outside the body under the watchful eye of the doctor and then is reimplanted into the body. However, if two consenting adults conceive, then that conception is viewed as a failure of birth control. So all births should be controlled by medicine. So births are okay if they are permitted by medicine, and they're not okay if they happen otherwise. Next is pregnancy, the belief about pregnancy. Now, this is definitely in the area of a control situation, especially when you get into prenatal care, which is simply the intervention every 1 to 4 weeks throughout the pregnancy cycle by a medical authority individual. In this case, let's say a doctor or a nurse practitioner, someone who has the power to say, hey, let's do this test. Oops, this test is not good. Hey, you should end this pregnancy. You should murder your child. And this is some pretty strong authority here to give. And even the thought that some entity, a human being, would have the means of determining if a pregnancy should be terminated. For example, many people submit to amniocentesis in the hopes that genetic analysis can tell them if they have a perfect or not perfect child. Amniocentesis readings are not 100%. A lot of times, birth defects are predicted, babies are aborted, only to find that they're actually normal. So this definitely comes under the rubric of religion. In other words, an arbitrary authority given a power perceived to be stronger than all other humans, that's superhuman, agency meaning power, and that basically elevates the doctor to a level of a god in this system of religious rules. Next is birth. It's perceived that the doctor, again, a godlike figure, is necessary to safely guide or control the birth process. And so any birth that happens outside of this, in other words, say a home birth, for example, is perceived as child abuse, and then you have child protective and the intervention of the state to penalize and negatively impact the family that's taken that initiative. So that's birth. So what we have then is a process supervised by the doctor. If it does not fall under the doctor's supervision, then the state intervenes and says, hey, this birth should have happened under the supervision of the doctor. An example of this happened during my residency. My residency occurred at a Catholic hospital at the time. And we're located in a neighborhood with many Vietnamese immigrants. And so this Vietnamese woman came in, and she was in labor. And the Vietnamese, the way that they conduct themselves in labor, they're very, very quiet. And so this lady came in labor, I was very busy with other women delivering and this and that. And so it took away literally 45 minutes, and the baby was there. Boom. Baby was out. The senior physician became absolutely incensed that this woman had not had a complete physical exam prior to delivering the baby. This was quite bizarre because the baby was very healthy. And in my mind, mother healthy, baby healthy, we call it success. The doctor was extremely, extremely upset. And so I explained to him, well, the baby is born. I can do a physical exam now, but obviously it's going to be different from the exam that would have taken place had the baby been inside the woman. In other words, you can't measure a pregnant belly when the lady is no longer pregnant. So the doctor explained that we needed to be able to bill for this. And so he wanted me to make up a pre-birth physical exam. I was absolutely floored. I'm not sure what happened, but I think I did not make up that physical exam because
I recall, he remained very upset. But this is an example of the religious nature of medicine, that doctors are imbued with this belief of superhuman powers, and they perform rituals to give the appearance of influencing a natural process, which of course they're not influencing at all, at least not positively. And this is a whole ritual, just like lighting the candles at church, or putting smoke, or taking a wafer sacrament. The doctors, all these rituals the doctor is supposed to do, and we call this the standard of care. We doctors tell ourselves, we tell our patients, in fact, we're even told that these things really do have an impact on patient well-being, when actually, there's really no evidence that any of it does.
And you have infancy, which is filled with forced medication, in this case vaccines, which are administered as a condition of the child being accepted into either daycare or school. In other words, this is a government condition or limitation placed on the infant and his family, saying you must adhere to this practice of immunization. And as we now know, there is no benefit to immunization. There is not even any scientific basis for it. And so this is certainly falls under religious practice.
And next we have grade school. That would be kindergarten through eighth grade. And during this period, the government mandates that children have periodic complete physical exams. At the time that I was participating in this religious ritual, it was mandated at grades first grade and fourth grade. At least those are the years where I was the doctor doing a physical exam. And I was really struck by the fact that there was nothing wrong with these students. There absolutely were no findings. And so this was simply a religious ritual mandated by the government, the state religion. And particularly one time was very distressing to me. I did an exam on a student, head-to-toe exam, and found that he had a splinter in his toe, a little splinter in his toe. Or actually, I'm sorry, he had a mildly ingrown toenail. So I mentioned this. I made a little notation of it. And right there, right in front of me, immediately on the spot, the nurse picked up the telephone, called up the child's mother, who worked the night shift, told her that she had better get out of bed immediately and come get this kid and take him to a doctor. Now, the child's life was absolutely not in danger. This ingrown nail could have been neglected for at least 2 more weeks with no adverse outcome. However, this is what happened to the mother. Now, the mother shook off the sleep and said, well, can you send him home in a cab and I'll pay the cab? Well, the nurse really got incensed at this, and at this point started yelling and screaming at the mother. And basically what it came down to is that mother didn't get out of her bed right then and there and come to school and get this kid and take him directly to the doctor and bring documentation that this was done, then Child Protective would get involved. And this is basically constitutes a state religion. This is a religion people are compelled to practice, and is enforced with the police power of the state.
Next, we have adolescents. If the adolescent does not behave properly, then the god of psychiatry descends upon him, diagnoses him as depressed, ADHD, oppositional defiant, impulsivity disorder, and drugs are prescribed. Of course, these drugs are known to create violence, known to create suicide, known to create long-term neurological complications like Parkinson's disease. Yet, an adolescent or the family of the adolescent that tries to refuse these drugs can find themselves receiving a lot of negative treatment from the government. And a person who submits to these drugs, their family is showered with maybe monthly checks, and a lot of, again, government positive reinforcement. So the decision to whether to accept or refuse medical therapy is not one that is left totally to the individual. So there's a lot of biased input on the part of the government. In other words, the side is to induce the person to accept the medical intervention and to abide by it. So now there's adulthood. Now, as an adult, I know when I was a kid, I looked forward to adulthood. That meant I could do everything just the way I wanted to. However, adults can be declared incompetent, mentally, emotionally incompetent, if they decide to refuse medical therapy. The presumption is medical therapy is so good that to refuse it itself, in and of itself, is a symptom of delirium. And the government helps with this decision by appearing to pay for medical care. And in the process of paying for medical care, the government establishes what care is to be received. Now, many people think that because they pay for their medical care privately, say to an insurance company, that this is private care, and of course it just isn't, because the insurance companies are heavily regulated by the government in terms of the care that they are permitted to pay for or obligated to pay for. So let's see how the medical system impacts the adult condition. Let's take a look at human sacrifice. Now, I know a lot of people feel that we live in a modern society, that we don't have human sacrifice, that's ridiculous, but 861,000 Americans every year die at the hands of doctors. And of that 861,000, 770,000 died at the hands of doctors who were doing everything perfectly according to medical protocols. And so this is basically human sacrifice. And so the medical industrial complex believes in human sacrifice, and this is a very active practice. So human sacrifice, yes, thumbs up to that. The other piece of the human sacrifice puzzle is people are actually killed in order to transplant their organs into other people. So now we have actually a form of cannibalism, where one person is murdered and those organs are taken and put into the body of another person. Now this is even more grotesque when you consider that up to 85% of recipients do not need the organs they are receiving. A good example is heart transplants. I've had patients who were told they need heart transplants. With dietary changes, they no longer needed them. I have a relative by marriage who was told by his doctor, you know what, we're putting you on the transplant list, the heart transplant list. And the guy said, no, I don't want to be on a heart transplant list. Walked out that office, changed his diet, took a few vitamins, and now his heart's just absolutely normal. So we have here human sacrifice and cannibalism, which are practiced and are a very important part of modern medicine. Let's take a look at other ways that modern medicine has values and impacts the lives of adults. One area is the area of sex, and that's really critical, because according to modern medicine, there's certain health conditions, pregnancy for example, or HPV virus, that's human papilloma wart virus. This virus is believed to cause cervical cancer. However, there are over 100 strains of this virus, and only 8 or 9 of those 100 strains cause or can cause cervical cancer, and of those that can cause it, most don't cause it. So what does this mean? This means that having a pap smear and showing HPV on pap smear is actually a spurious finding and not very useful. And in other words, the pelvic exam is not of medical benefit. Now, if you talk to a medical person who favors pap smear, they'll tell you that pap smears cut the death rate from cervical cancer in half. That's true. So you go from 6 deaths per 100,000 women to 3 deaths per 100,000 women per year. This is not an area where prevention actually makes sense. So the question then comes, the medical establishment recommends the use of condoms at all times when engaging in sex. So this is a value system that's being imposed on those who worship at this church. Now, modern medicine also says you should not have multiple sex partners. Well, what's multiple sex partners? Are they saying then that divorce is not allowed? You can't have one sex partner get a divorce and then have another sex partner? So this is not clear, but this is, again, an area where medicine has a firm opinion. And people who do not adhere to this practice are considered bad. And I'm not agreeing or disagreeing with this. I'm simply saying that these systems are there, the values are there, and, you know, it's a problem. Patient identification. You're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. And, of course, visit our sponsor, the book, Do You Have the Guts to Be Beautiful? This anti-aging book can help you look and feel 20 years younger. And it's available at vitalitycapsules.com/truth-files. And for a limited time, there is free shipping in the United States. And, of course, I welcome your calls and questions. And please call in at 914-338-0695. Well, let's take another look at the regulation of sex. We mentioned before a test before marriage. And another thing that is an issue is refusal of health care on behalf of a minor. So if a minor goes to their doctor, the doctor recommends health care, and that health care is refused, and that's considered a form of child abuse, the government or the state can intervene with police power in the form of child protective, remove the child from his family, and give the care that was refused. Now, refusal of health care on behalf of an adult is elder abuse. And the police power of the state can intervene and administer the health care that was refused. As we mentioned before, immunizations are compelled by law, and police power, again, is exercised against those who refuse, even to the point of putting the children in foster care. The one that really disturbs me, of course, though, is when a doctor issues a statement that a person is expected to live less than 6 months. This is a prescription the doctor writes that gets the person into hospice. Hospice is actually prosecuted if people live longer. In other words, hospice is then charged with making sure the person dies in 6 months or less. Now, the other participation we can see of government in this religion is the public service announcements, often from the FDA, that mirror the values and edicts of the medical industrial complex. So let's look at these values. One value is theft. This is important. You know, in many religions, it's believed that theft, stealing, taken from another person, is not a good thing. In medicine, this is the best thing. We can see theft when people are murdered and their organs are transplanted into other people. That's definitely a form of theft. But even more subtle form of theft is health insurance itself. Each person gets health insurance and pays into it, and they're betting that what they're paying in is less than what they're going to get out. In other words, they're actually going to steal or receive from the others who are putting into that fund. And this is a real slippery slope. And I think this value of theft and actually insinuating it into the very fiber of all medicine is what makes medicine so much more dangerous. People will say, oh, I'm going to go get my annual exam because I've already paid for it, and my insurance covers it, as opposed to treating it as insurance, which is, oh, if I don't need it, I won't bother. Next is extortion. What was once insurance has now become extortion. It's become a burdensome payment that can impoverish a family, and that's compulsory. The individual family or person no longer has a choice about whether or not to have insurance or to financially participate in the healthcare system. The next value is the value of human life. Again, these are all, we're talking about spiritual values. But we have a system called medicine that has some very firm spiritual values that they're being imposed on the laity, if you will. What is the value of human life? And this is very interesting. The value of human life is only valuable if you can bill for it. Only if the insurance company says yes. And at no point in life is there a right to life. So in other words, at no point can a doctor say, wait, I followed this protocol in the past, all the patients died, I don't think I'm going to do this anymore. The doctor has to stick to that protocol. The individual patient in front of him does not have a right to life. And that's just the value the medical system places on children. Children are a burden, no doubt about it. They are a burden to the couple because the parents have to pay $15,000 plus for the kid to be even get born. The parents have to pay for the vaccine and even the medical bills of the children. But the children are a burden of an even greater nature because the medical profession has the belief that the world is overpopulated and only certain people should reproduce. This is kept very vague, but in terms of who these people are, it should reproduce. But there's an idea of birth control, and everyone should practice birth control for as long as possible. And so children are not value. It's a responsibility of every adult to practice birth control and not have children. So every child then becomes a mistake. Unless, of course, the child was conceived with the usual $20,000 to $150,000 of infertility intervention. And so the value of a child in the womb is zero. Deaths in the womb before 20 weeks are not even counted. There's no prohibition whatever against medical intervention, we'll call it prenatal care, that causes the end of a pregnancy before 20 weeks, even though there's evidence that this is happening in wanted pregnancies. So the value of a child is absolutely, of an unborn child is absolutely zero. In fact, it's kind of negative because it's believed that this kid, should he be born, will be contributing to overpopulation. And should there be medical intervention before 20 weeks that results in the death of this child, those deaths are not even counted. It's not even considered to be a medical failure, let alone a crime. The next value is murder of the innocent. Is it okay to murder innocent people? Is it okay to murder people who have committed no crimes? And in this case, in medicine, it is a resounding absolutely yes. One example is the Medicare system that has admitted in writing in the Inspector General's report that 15,000 Medicare recipients every month die as a result of medical care. And the fact that it's medical homicide removes any protection of due process from the individual patient. They have no right to face their accusers. In fact, there is no need for accusation. They are simply murdered. Next is right to justice. This is another value. In the medical system, there is no right to justice. It's not a value. There's no right of the victim to challenge his torturers unless they committed torture without following the protocol. So entering the hospital or the realm of the doctor is suspension of free will, suspension of human rights of all kinds. The next guy that most religions take a position on is love. You know, is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? What is it? And in medicine, love is considered an outdated emotion. Parents are expected to abort children who are not perfect. And since the test to detect genetic imperfections are not perfect, this means many normal children are aborted, and this is okay. And so under no circumstances is a person allowed to make a decision based on compassion or emotion. In other words, it's not permitted to forego care that would cause unwanted suffering. Science has said this care is needed, then the care is needed. Now, it has this caveat here that 85% of scientific research is, it's fraudulent. The results are fake. They're not true. And so based on this 85% fake research, people are given no choice. So then it's okay to coerce or force care. So there's not an element of love here. It's very harsh imposition. Next, if a man has a heart attack or has surgery of any kind, he is expected to consult his doctor for permission to engage in sex with his wife. In other words, this means that the basic position is that love harms. Love is harmful. Next, no religion would be complete without confession. So, patients are expected to go to their doctor and confess all. And the doctor gives absolution in the form of a prescription. The doctor will then prescribe medicines for the patient's sins. Whether the sin is compulsive behavior, sadness, anger, depression, whatever. So people are expected to confess to their doctor their feelings and thoughts. And the doctor then gives absolution in the form of a prescription. And so our superhuman deity, every religion needs them, otherwise it wouldn't be religion. The superhuman deities then become the doctor, who's the priest, and the government that licenses the doctors, because you presume the government has the ability to choose who should and should not have this special power. Insurance companies have this power, and hospitals have this power. These are all the superhuman deities. And then, of course, there's the creation of life. Doctors, again, the priests, these gods, create life in petri dishes. And any, as I mentioned before, reproduction outside of this framework is a presumed accident due to birth control failure and frowned upon. Next, we have sodomy. Now, sodomy is the intrusion of devices of whatever type into different orifices in the body, maybe the mouth, rectum, vagina. And every religion has an opinion on sodomy. And the medical religion says sodomy is A-OK. And we see this with colonoscopy exams, rectal exams, screening pap smears and pelvic exams, which are actually a form of rape. Why? Because the woman is led to believe that she has a medical benefit to gain from this exam when actually she does not. So being done under false pretenses, therefore consent is not valid, and this then becomes sexual contact without permission. So the medical religion says that this rape is okay. Next is the authority. The authority of the doctor is absolute. Any non-compliance is not permitted. Second opinion allowed, but no lay input is allowed, just like any religion. You can't have a run-of-the-mill worshiper challenging the word of the priest that just doesn't get it. And so we have people believing that because a person doesn't have a medical degree, what they say cannot be true, and because they have a medical degree or license, then what they say cannot be false. And so we see here some very religious authoritarian thinking here. So choice and judgment then lies only with the priest. The priest decides if the individual can go to work, get disability payments, go to jail, or go to treatment program, or go to a psych hospital. So this is an intense amount of authority, and so the authority is with the doctor and is absolute. And the other thing is, what about deciding what's good and what's not good? Well, the doctors are licensed by the state. They must adhere to protocols. These are enforced by the state due to loss of license by government agencies such as medical boards, loss of payment from insurance companies, which are regulated heavily by the state, and the doctor's ability to work is severely limited if he does not adhere to these protocols. So the doctor's behavior is dictated and controlled by the state. And this makes it kind of prima facie, in other words, on the face of it, a state religion. It means that if the priests are all controlled by the state, their behavior dictated by the state, then it makes us a definite state religion. Now, also we have the HIPAA Act, which means that the government has access to all medical records, especially now with the Affordable Care Act, where it's the government that will be overseeing the care. Now you're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at FlakesRadio.com. Please visit our sponsor, which is the book, Do You Have the Guts to Be Beautiful? And this anti-aging book can help you look and feel 20 years younger. Yes, men too. And it's available right now, free shipping at VitalityCapsules.com/truth-files. And you no longer have to fear wrinkles. Erase them at will with this book, You Have the Guts to Be Beautiful. And I welcome your calls and questions, so please call in at 914-338-0695. Now, the other issue about a state-sponsored religion is, again, the control appears to be firmly and totally in the hands of the state in this case. And payment is only on the approval of the state, especially now with the Affordable Health Care Act. And participation appears to be compulsory, with taxation and penalties for non-participation. So we conclude this is definitely a state religion. Well, what is a person to do? Oh, there has to be a devotional. Like some religions, you go to church every Saturday, there's a devotional. In medicine, there is a devotional. It's called the annual physical exam. So you have the annual physical exam as one devotional people are expected to adhere to. Another devotional is the well-child visit. And so whether you need to or not, you're supposed to show up for the well-child visit to receive your pronouncements. And so we have all the earmarkings of a religion. It is a state religion, and it's also a deadly one. So what can be done? Now, a lot of people say, oh, you know, we should trash the whole medical system, but, you know, I'm in favor of free choice. I think that's a bit harsh. I think we can do something that will solve the problem, yet, you know, not be an issue. First is something called disestablishment. And this is a process of depriving a church of its status as an organ of the state. So, in this case, the state would have no input in coercing people to adhere to the religion of the state. In this case, the religion of medicine. So, something like this is what would be needed. The state shall make no law pertaining to refusal or acceptance of medical care. The state shall not make consumption of medical care a condition for participation in public affairs or employment or any other activity in society. Any participation in medical care shall be voluntary. And any payment for medical care shall be a private matter. This is really important. Now, what this would do is give people the freedom to choose if they want medical care or if they want to heal any other kind of way or do nothing at all. There's a preponderance of the evidence indicating that doing nothing at all, totally ignoring your condition, is actually safer than seeking medical attention. And so that being the case, there is a compelling case to allow individuals to decide whether or not they want to consume medical care of any kind. And so it's not okay to make provision of medical care the auspices of the government. For example, can you imagine someone telling you that you have to go back to your acupuncturist and get your treatment, or your child will be taken away from you because you'll be an unfit parent since you haven't been keeping up with your acupuncture treatment? Can you imagine the police apprehending you because you didn't take your children to the chiropractor? The fact that this is even difficult to imagine makes it really obvious that there's a bias going on here. And so if we simply remove all government coercion to participate or not participate in what's now perceived as a medical care system, then I think it would restore to the Constitution, or really to the people of the United States, the freedom of religion. Right now, there is a religion, it is state-sponsored, and participation is becoming not only compulsory, but oppressive, and just as oppressive as the religion that our forefathers escape when they came to the United States.
In other words, the doctor is making religious decisions and usurping the authority of the church the same way that our present government has made the Constitution meaningless. The medical industrial complex has made all religious texts meaningless and totally frustrates the efforts of any individual to either practice their own personal religion or be a part of a larger religious context or even to exercise their own personal conscience when it comes to how they want to live their life. Well, that's the end of the basic part of our session today. We have some readers who's, or listeners rather, who sent in some questions, so we're going to see if we can address those questions. First one, you mentioned suspension of rights and free will on admission to the hospital. What can a person do? Okay, first of all, you should try not to go to the hospital. When I say try, let me be a little stronger than that. You should absolutely not go to the hospital. Your chances of dying in the hospital from causes unrelated to your illness, in other words, from medical care itself, is 1% per admission. So if you look at this on a risk per day basis, then it comes down to about 0.25% per day. And actually, your chances of dying in the hospital do increase with the duration of your hospital stay. And you just can't get a higher death rate. Even in war, there's not that high a death rate. So first, don't go. But let's say you end up in the hospital for some reason. If you do end up going to the hospital, the best way to get to the hospital is not through the emergency room. The highest death rate is in the emergency room. The best way, if you have to go to the hospital, is to have your private doctor call in medical orders in advance and have you admitted directly. It's called a direct admission. So admissions through the emergency room are the most dangerous. Okay. The other question is, you're already in the hospital and you want to exercise your right to refuse or your free will on some particular issue. Let's just get really down to brass tacks. What's going to kill you is a doctor writing a prescription or an order and the nurse either following it or doubling the dose or whatever. So first, of course, you can be aware of what drugs you are and are not supposed to be taking, and when the nurse offers you something either off schedule or in a higher dose than what you are aware of, you can simply refuse it and ask her to recheck. So that's basic safety. But beyond that, let's say the doctor writes the correct orders, nurse is following properly, we can expect at least 107,000 deaths just from the nurse doing the right thing. So how do you do that? Well, first of all, I would say I believe everyone should have what's called a do not resuscitate order. And a lot of people say, no, because if you have a do not resuscitate, then they'll try and kill you. Actually, quite the opposite. Most efforts at resuscitation are themselves lethal. So, and what I've found in my observations, people who have do not resuscitate orders in place actually do a lot better and have a greater chance of leaving the hospital alive. Because the doctor knows, or he believes, that if he makes a mistake, then you can't undergo resuscitation, get put on life support forever, and have his mistake mitigated. So when someone has a do not resuscitate order, the doctor's a little more cagey about giving drastic drugs that are likely to murder the person. Because doctors actually believe in their ability to resuscitate people. Now, the next thing is, let's say you're being confronted with an order that you are not going to take this drug. You've got your mind made up. The doctor has prescribed it, the nurse is attempting to follow his orders, and you're just like, you know what, I am not participating with this. There's two forms that can save you. One is the signing out against medical advice. You can just sign out right there on the spot. Say, you know what? I am signing out. I am no longer a patient. I am signing out against medical advice. When you declare that you are no longer a patient, the nurse has to cease and desist. All the doctor's orders are then invalid and null. And the nurse, under the direction of hospital administration, doctor's not involved, will immediately turn on her heels like any great infantry soldier. She will go straight to the nursing station, get the discharge against medical advice papers, and tell you exactly where to sign. Boom, done. Now, at that point, of course, all IVs will be stopped, everything will be stopped, and you will be left as a whole person to just leave the hospital. That's another option, and I personally think that's actually the best option. But there's another form called a do not treat form. This is a very interesting form. The do not treat form allows you to remain in the hospital and refuse any and all treatment. What's the advantage of this? A lot of people bring their loved one to the hospital because they're just too much to handle at home. A person maybe needs turning or needs to be cleaned or needs this or that. That person's just debilitated. What a do not treat form allows is it allows you to basically be in the hospital, occupy a hospital bed, at the same time not get any treatment. What good is this? Well, while you're in this do not treat status, you can have your family bring in therapeutic juices of your choice, vitamins, herbs, and so on. And so all do not treat means that the hospital will not treat you. So this allows your immune system to heal you. Now, you might eventually get evicted, because remember, there's accountants upstairs, the number crunchers, and when they crunch the numbers and figure out the hospital's profits are not growing with each day, then they will discharge you. You will be evicted. They'll find a doctor who will sign the orders, and you're out of there. But that is much better than being killed. That's much better than taking the lethal dose. By the way, I have a book, The Lethal Dose, Why Your Doctor is Prescribing It. Get it on Amazon. It will definitely open your eyes. Next question from a listener. You mentioned confession. What if a patient admits to a crime while talking to his doctor? Okay, this is interesting. We are taught in medical school as physicians that if we perceive a crime is in progress or the patient is committing or has committed a crime, it's actually our job to call the police. Can you imagine? It would be my job as a physician to call the police and have the police haul a patient out of my office and take them down to the police office. Boy, is that good for business, huh? But that is what doctors are taught and trained to do. So now with electronic records, even if the doctor's a little squeamish and doesn't want to call the police and have you hauled out, if he notates your confession in the medical records, this information or confession is readily available to your employer, who's maybe the payer, your insurance company, and the government. Just about as fast as you can turn on a light bulb. So, very bad idea to confess to the doctor. Now, in my medical practice, when patients make a confession to a crime or even an intent to commit a crime, I would say, excuse me, I won't be writing that down. Forgive me if I don't remember it the next time you come to see me. Because patients will come in. I mean, the reason patients come in to see doctors is they're having a difficult time. And sometimes people will say, hey, you know, I'd like to murder my husband. I am supposed to, as a responsible physician, immediately call the police and have this person arrested because obviously your husband's life is in danger. But that's not what I did as a doctor. Again, I had a cash practice, right? So arresting my patients won't go very well with me, or of course with them. You know, I would ask the person, you know, how bad is this? You know, if you got the weapon picked out, where do things sit? And generally, without exception, I found that I felt her husband's life would probably last another couple of days. And I would just change the woman's diet, give her a couple of vitamins. 2 days later, she comes back and she's feels like she's got a good husband. So do not confess to your doctor, a very, very bad idea. Anything you say to your doctor from this day forward, because of laws that have just been passed, in other words, the budget crisis has passed, and so now the Affordable Health Care Act and HIPAA as well are in force. This means anything you say to your physician, you might as well just print in the first page of the newspaper. Okay, next. Is there a way women can prevent cervical cancer without a pap smear or pelvic exam? Because you mentioned that this is just a religious ritual. Okay, that's a good question. The answer is yes. A lot of research shows that cervical cancer is simply the result of a B vitamin deficiency. So the answer would be B complex 50, take 2 twice a day, once or twice a day. So if you're like 120 pounds or less, take it once a day. If you're more than 120 pounds, then take it twice a day. I just like to say, whenever you have sex, the penis brushes up against the cervix. This is normal. And, of course, it scrapes off a few cells. This is also normal. The body then attempts to repair and replace those cells. Again, this is normal. So the person has sex frequently, even with the same partner, then there's going to be a lot of repair going on. And so the cervical cancer comes in when the repair mechanism is overloaded and it fails. I say women should have less sex? No. I'm saying women should maybe take some B-complex vitamins instead of seeing a doctor for a villainous, sodomizing rape incident. All right, superhuman, next question. What do you mean by superhuman powers? Okay. Superhuman powers means that a person has powers that other humans don't have. In the case of the doctor, his superhuman power is that he knows things no other humans, in other words, non-doctors, know. And because of the superior knowledge, of course, he can tell you things that you would never be able to figure out yourself. This is absolutely false. Another superhuman power the doctor is supposed to have is that he has the power to do things for you that you cannot do for yourself. He has the power to do things for you that no non-doctor can do. In terms of your health, this is absolutely false. By that I mean the healing mechanisms or healing methods that the doctor was taught in medical school are in no way superior to your body's own intrinsic healing methods. What has happened, like any good religion, is that the doctor performs certain rituals, and at the end of the day, you attribute to the doctor healing that was actually the responsibility or came about as a result of your own body's healing mechanisms. So that's number one. The second thing is, everything bad that happens to the patient and the doctor are both trained to perceive that event as something your body did or that your body created, not an effect of the physician. And it's this incredible magical thinking that gives a doctor incredible status, even above that of God. Because the issue with God is that God is responsible for everything. So God is responsible for the good and for the bad. And so it's a tainted image, or could be. But the doctor, he's got a better deal than God's got. He only takes credit for the good. And the bad, even in medical school, and the bad, we give that credit to God. That's all God's fault. But the good, that's the doctor's fault, or the doctor's virtue, actually. So this is what we mean by superhuman powers. And in medical school, the doctor even is attributed super godlike powers. And, you know, we were told in medical school, we are fixing the mistakes that God makes. Now, God, we know that God, whatever your God's name might be, is head of a religion. And so now the doctor is being placed above that God as a head of actually all religions, even more powerful than that. So the doctor is given superhuman powers, much like Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, and unfortunately, kids are trained on these superhero stories, and so they see the doctor like, oh yeah, I know, I understand. So that concept is already planted in the kid's mind. Okay, the next question, you say payment out of pocket would be a solution for this. Wouldn't that make healthcare unaffordable? How could people afford this? Okay. This is an interesting question. There's two answers to this. First answer is, 85% of all medical care is absolutely useless. In other words, it has no impact on improving your health. So if you were not if you could not afford it, the chances are outstanding that the inability to afford health care or medical care would likely save your life. That's number one. Now the next thing is, if only out-of-pocket payment were allowed for medical care, that's only a payment allowed, the medical prices would decline by an estimated 90%. And that's about right. They would decline to an amount that is actually less than or equal to present out-of-pocket expenses. Now, this is really a shocking thing. Now, what goes on here is the patient actually pays monthly premiums to an insurance company. The insurance company pays out to the doctors, hospitals, and drug companies an amount less than what it collects. So a person's purchasing power for healthcare is actually diminished by using an insurance company. Just a mathematical fact. That's number one. But secondly, the insurance company's payout doesn't benefit the patient. So get this. Patient pays insurance company. Got it. In any other insurance situation, like let's say a fire or life insurance, the insurance company pays the individual, the human being. Imagine if the doctor went and got three estimates for open heart surgery and went back to the insurance company and said, best estimate is $26,000. What's the insurance company going to do? If it was a house fire, they would give the patient the $26,000 and they would tell him, you can keep the $26,000 or you can spend it on open heart surgery, your choice. So if we made healthcare exactly like every other insurance mechanism, healthcare prices would absolutely plummet and personal wealth would soar. So again, but we can't do that. It's a religion. And in any religion, the laity are always to be kept in a position of helplessness, if possible, ignorance, and, of course, poverty. So payment out of pocket, unaffordable, the answer is not really. And if you want to have insurance, the adjustment would be to make sure that the insurance could only make payments to the insured. It could not make payments to the doctor, to the drug company, to anyone else but the insured. And the insured would always have the choice of keeping the money and doing nothing or paying the money to the hospital or to the doctor or to whoever. And I think that would save a lot of lives. This 851,000 Americans who die each year at the hands of medical care would drastically reduce. Next question. Can parents refuse vaccines in the hospital at birth? Okay, this is interesting. The vaccine ritual is being extended to the moment of birth. And so what can happen? First of all, can you absolutely refuse? The answer is, one, it's not wise, and two, probably not. So how do you do this? First, you say you have a private doctor who will vaccinate this child after discharge. And so they'll say to you, will you take this child to the doctor when he's 2 weeks old or 1 month old? You say, oh, yes, I will. And that gets you out of the hospital without the vaccines. And by the way, there's another shot the baby gets in the hospital called the vitamin K shot. This is the shot your baby gets that causes him to become jaundiced and need to spend 4 more days in the hospital. So while you're at it, you might want to refuse the vitamin K shot while you're refusing the vaccination. This is another ritual, of course. Next question, superstition. It actually is. It's totally superstition, because the witch's rattle is just replaced with, say, an ultrasound machine. And people say, oh, I'm not going to pay attention to a witch doctor who's got some kind of rattle. No way. But you show them an ultrasound machine and show them an ultrasound printout or a picture, they'll say, oh, yeah, I believe that. Of course, yes, I'll submit. And so, really, it is absolutely totally analogous to a pagan religion with rattles and bones and chicken entrails and all this kind of stuff. And I think people need to see that correlation. And I think it'll make it easier for people to save their lives. Contrary to popular opinion, nobody can save your life but you. Nobody. The government is not looking over the doctor's shoulder and saying, hey, don't do that, you might hurt somebody. The insurance company is not looking over the doctor's shoulder and saying, hey, don't do that, you could hurt that patient. There's absolutely nobody in the system looking out for you, zero. In fact, quite the contrary. The Medicare system is punishing institutions that aren't murdering enough people. So you need to, in your mind, do whatever you can to decondition yourself, to see the comparison between the witch's rattle and the blood pressure cuff, to see the analogy between the vampire's teeth and the needle that draws blood for the so-called test. These are analogies you need to see. You need to understand in your own mind. And that'll give you the courage to say, wait, I'm not going to be part of this pagan religion. I'm not going to be part of this ridiculous worship whose only goal is your destruction. So it's really important to have that perspective. Okay, well, that's the end of today's program. Next week, what do we got? Next week's topic is you cannot win on defense. What does that mean? That means if you spend your life trying to prevent disease, you can never get health. Because each act you take to prevent disease is going to cost you time, money, and health. And you'll never even be able to know if it worked or not. I'll go into more detail next week. But please email me, Dr. Daniels. Email me at support@vitalitycapsules.com. And let me know what disease you're trying to avoid. And I'll be sure to address that next week. Okay. Thank you very much. And this is the end of Healing with Dr. Daniels.
Hi, this is Dr. Daniels. We have a few more minutes in case people have some questions. So if you do have a question, you can click your number one on your mic there, and I can answer questions. Otherwise, I can just start the theme music for the rest of the program. So I'd like to, just while I'm waiting for people to have questions, I'd like to say that the state religion of modern medicine has really been phenomenal in terms of murdering so many people so quickly with the apparent consent, cooperation and participation of so many individuals in terms of citizens. The health care received in the United States is more deadly for U.S. citizens than the bombs are for the citizens of Iraq. So it's really a shocking and amazing thing. So seeing that we have no additional questions, I'll say goodbye and we'll see you again next week.